Well, good afternoon. We didn't talk to each other at all before these presentations, but they make some kind of sense. There were three brilliant talks, and I certainly understand much better what I'm going to say now. Whether you will, yeah, that's we'll find out. So what I'm trying to do here is, you know, taking seriously platform capitalism as a starting point. We need to develop an understanding of what the regulatory object is. So what is the platform? And we also need to have an understanding what the regulatory agent is. So the copyright questions become part of a much bigger picture. And if we look back when the construct of a platform as an object of regulation first turned up, that was really in a legal form in 2016 in a communication by the European Commission. And I just read you a few of the aspects here. So in the 2016 communication, the European Commission mentions search engines, social media, e-commerce platforms, app stores, and price comparison sites. Okay, so that's the list of what platforms are in 2016. If you look at the digital platform inquiry in Australia, which was conducted this year, we have three. We have got search engines, we've got social media platforms, and we have got digital content aggregators. So they are an addition to the European concept, so news come into it. But we don't have, you know, Spotify in there or Netflix or any of the streaming services. And if we look at the globally first effort to establish direct liability for platforms, you have to look at the German model of the, you know, NetzDG. For our non-German guests, you know, they always like the Netzwerkdurchsetzungsgesetz. Okay, that's it's one of those nice ways of the German language to make things really clear what we're trying to do. So the target here is social networks. And both the Australian model and the German model, they have a quantitative threshold. So the Australians require a turnover in Australia of $100 million, I think. And the Germans require 2 million users in the country of the social networks. Okay, so they're quite different starting points. So you've got now a menu of possibilities, okay? So, and you might think a platform, you know, what underlies the European approach in 2016 is maybe this market structuring aspect. So what I want to do first now, I want to give you basically three underlying premises which might motivate these kind of regulatory constructs. So the first one is pretty simple, okay? So I call that national sovereignty. So we can't have multinational firms who are beyond our reach. And as they become more important to our societies, you know, it's more or less like an oil company in the 1970s. You know, it's a vast multinational company that in many ways has the ability to circumvent national laws. So that makes states nervous, and therefore they will act, okay? So they will invent mechanisms to get hold of these servers. The second starting point is really an economic starting point. And I trace that back to a classic paper here by Tirol, who was awarded the Nobel Prize a couple of years ago, in part for this work. So this is really the beginning of platform as a area of inquiry for economists. And it defines them as, you know, here in this case, as two-sided markets. Now we mostly talk about many-sided markets, and the idea is quite simple. So the classic two-sided market model is the newspaper. So the newspaper, you know, has subscribers, they pay money, or buyers who pay money, and they've got advertisers who pay money, and the the role of the newspapers is to bring these groups together. And so how you position yourself between those two markets, that's the key, and which is sometimes called the business model. So we're moving more into these kind of markets. So we no longer have the linear relationship, you know, between a supplier and a customer. We have something quite different. We've got something which brings multiple social groups together, and how you position yourself, that's really the challenge. So if that is true, and I think it's true, that requires a new regulatory approach, because in many ways it challenges the traditional competition law, how you regulate markets. And I've put up a couple of questions, you know, where traditionally competition law struggles. So how can you be dominant in a market when the service is free, is one of them. The other one, you know, how normally dominance is established with respect to a particular market. But if Google now buys, you know, as they have done a couple of weeks ago, one of the last smartwatch companies on the market, you know, so Google is not in smartwatches, so they're not dominant in the market for smartwatches. So, you know, is there a competition issue here? So the way to look at that is, you know, that inherent in these platform markets is that you have to build up a user base, and that user base you then negotiate between different markets. So that's the key. And I assume the regulatory tools need to reflect that. The third starting point I call here data autonomy. So that's neither state sovereignty nor kind of a new economic mechanism. It's you know, almost a religious belief that we as human beings should have control of our, you know, data representation. And I don't need to spend too much time on that, because, you know, we all, at least in Europe, have been put through the mill of ticking requirements for this law. But it has, you know, extremely ambitious and uplifting messages. It's, you know, designed to serve mankind. So what follows from these three starting points? Well, it gives us a way to, in a way, examine the regulatory approaches we have been confronted with. And I'll just list here some. So the competition law one maps straight onto the, you know, the emergence of platform markets. Data protection laws match straight to, you know, the data regulation as a regulatory aims. But then it gets much more complicated. So we have the online harms agenda. So the German Netzdg fits straight in there. So basically we have here, you know, online harms conceptualized as a set of, you know, criminal offenses which establish liability even if the platform didn't commit them themselves. Media regulation traditionally starts with broadcasters, but for streaming services, particularly video streaming services, they've been now extended, you know, with the Audiovisual Services Directive in the European Union. Then we've got electoral law, advertising regulation, we've got security, terrorism regulations. We've got a new set of regulators relating to data ethics and AI. So in the UK, we just have something which may become a statutory regulator soon. So this deals with kind of the aspects that inherent in this technology, there is a tendency towards discrimination, because it's simply pattern detection. And past patterns will be, you know, projected into the future, regardless of whether they are desired or not. And then we've got copyright law. And copyright law is an interesting example, because in many ways it's kind of at the forefront of establishing this kind of turn in the liability regime. I come back to that. But I think it's important to see here copyright law in this bigger trend. Okay, we've got a new object of regulation, and copyright law is just one. And it's an unusual one in that it deals with private rights. So there are private rights between normally which are enforced between private parties. So what the public role is quite contested. So we've got this menu of different potential regulatory agencies which deal with these things. So for competition law, obviously, you know, every country has a particular authority. You know, they will do, you know, handle mergers. They will start competition inquiries. And the same thing for data protection laws in Europe. You know, we all have the information commissioner or the data ombudsman. Every country has a different term for these, but you know, there's in law something, a regulatory body. For the online harms agenda, you know, in Germany we have the NetzDG, and that's directly supervised by an agency of the Justice Ministry. But in other countries, in the UK, for example, it will go to Ofcom, which is the communications regulator. For media regulation, we've got the media regulators, and so on. So you can see that suddenly we have got, you know, lots of regulators springing up. So they all have a statutory basis and particular duties imposed or created by statute, and they're all going to the same object of regulation. To make things even more interesting, the European Commission has now committed to establishing a new European regulator, so which may or may not bring some of these things together. So in the hearings in June, there's a quote here from von der Leyen. So she said, and that is really based on a paper which the Commission had already drafted. Basically, she bought into that concept: upgrade our liability and safety rules for digital platforms, services, and products. And basically, what's in this package, in the Digital Service Act, what we know at the moment, I mean, there's no public record of all this, but, you know, on leaked documents and inside talks, you know, what is coming looks like that. So one is, you know, the safe harbor from the e-commerce directive will be, if not removed, then changed. And then we will probably establish rules which are not that far from the German NetzDG relating to hate speech and other illegal content, and there will be some regulation of political advertising. And there may even be some regulatory body dealing with the implementation of the copyright directive, because Article 17, you know, the way things are going, the French vision and the vision of the Netherlands, to a degree the German vision, look very, very different. And what you may end up with is that it's not a digital single market. In fact, it will be less single market than it was before. So that poses a problem. And so if the aim was to force Google to pay for news aggregation, how do you do that? We can speak about that later. It's probably more this kind of beer talk. Okay, so now let's evaluate what this kind of big change might mean. And I use here the example of the NetzDG because it's one of the, I mean, it's the first statutory move in this change of liability. And secondly, it's one of the few where we have some data. Okay, so we talked, Joe mentioned it, Neva mentioned it, Rasmus mentioned it. So there are these things happening, but we don't know. So we basically created a private police with delegated by state powers. So the platforms do something which the state probably in a more considered regime should do in a public and contestable manner. But under the NetzDG, we have at least a reporting requirement. So they have to say when there are requests for removing content that is from social media platforms that fall within a list of criminal laws. And so that's the first report, which was published in 2018. And it has some curiosities in there, in particular that Facebook doesn't seem to have any complaints. There were, in fact, this year in July, they were fined 2 million euros for this as misreporting. Because in fact, they hide the NetzDG form, the takedown form, and direct people to their own internal flagging system, so which then means they don't have to report it. But what I'm suggesting here is, you know, in order to evaluate what the regulatory landscape in the future will look like if we change liability in this form, you know, this is just a starting point, but it gives you at least a indication of what kind of knowledge we should need as regulators. Okay, another way of producing data is obviously doing it yourself. You can do it through experiments. You know, Niva again has done it, and Rasmus has done it, or you can do it by hand. You can essentially just study, read it on Parity Takedown. So if you want to work out, you know, why stuff disappears, you could do it by hand coding, by looking, you know, this study looks at music videos which can correlate to a set of top 100 UK charting songs. And it this looks at the basically the death rate of them, and then tries to code why they disappear. But we hand coded all of these videos, so that's a real problem. Essentially, if we have to, you know, create subterfuge or tricks in order to extract information about how the regime works. Okay, so now I end my talk with a set of really difficult questions, and there probably is a research agenda in there for a few years. But I thought, you know, this is a good audience to test them. Unfortunately, I can't read them. no, just about. It's just about possible. Okay, so to some degree, I've already indicated. Okay, so. The assumptions underpinning these different regulatory regimes, they're quite different. You know, is it about regulating efficient markets? It's about establishing state sovereignty. Is it about, you know, particular kind of value of personal autonomy, or, you know, what is it? And is it possible to put all these together into a coherent liability regime? So that's a big question. I don't have an answer to that, but what I sense at the moment is, you know, what the European Commission is doing, and to a degree what's been experimented in Australia, in the UK, it's coming. So it's creating a new agenda of online harm and creating a new one-fits-all regulator is a problematic approach. And if we do that, we have to be really careful how we do that. So what we find in practice, which might be happening, for example, if there's a merger inquiry, the information commissioner, which deals with data issues, will be involved in, for example, in the question, if Google buys a smartwatch, then the question of what's the state of the data which Google acquired will come part of the merger inquiry. So this would be just a competition law approach with some input from, you know, from the data side. But that doesn't get us into the online harm end at all. So there's a lot of confusion here. Then the second question really looks at what will these new regulators and mean for the... we heard a lot of empirical material relating to how these... notice and take down and filtering and algorithmic decision-making processes, how they implemented. And we have not a good understanding whether they, you know, should be evaluated under competition rules, whether they should be evaluated under some, you know, discrimination rules, whether they should be evaluated under data autonomy rules, and we don't even know how they work in the first place. So that is really an area where empirical work is absolutely necessary, but we can't do it. So the regulator is required to help us here. And we need also to understand what do these mean for the culture in which we live, and you know, both as creators, as consumers, and both of it, which most of us are. So the world which we live in will be shaped by these regulatory regimes, by the rankings, by the, you know, what we see, whether we know what we see, why we see it. So we need to lift the box, and the regulator needs to help us in that process. The next question relates to, well, in the content industry, now data is seen as basically a magic power. So that's the narrative which, so Netflix knows at which moment you switch off watching, you know, or Spotify knows at what time of the day you're inclined in which way. And from this knowledge of the data, you will be much better selecting content in which you invest in the future. So that's a theory. Nobody knows whether that's really true, but again, it's an area which is worth examining before one assesses what the role of copyright law here is in offering, you know, incentives to create new stuff. The concentration questions I've already raised, so they mostly point towards the competition end. Now we come to the question: is it dystopia or utopia? So is in all this a potential for a democratization, or do we can't help moving towards a concentration of control based on data, which is in the hand of a few? Again, that I think it's just a broad research question, but I think one should raise it. And I give you an example. So we may think, we live in a golden age of cultural production, but the tools we are using are not neutral. So if you take a photo of a sunset, you know, you no longer see the photo you took, you see the photo which has been constructed by, you know, your camera. And the camera already optimizes what you display for social media use. It's very simple. Okay, so the same mechanisms we find in other areas. So the way the technology works and the way, you know, artificial intelligence, I wouldn't call it machine learning really, creates patterns which are optimized for certain uses, in effect has a consequence for the culture we live in. So looking at these kind of very difficult questions, they're really, try to, you know, I wrote them for myself to think about, you know, so are we in the age beyond copyright? You know, are these now the big questions? And if these are the big questions, you know, shall we forget about copyright law? Does it really still play a part in solving some of these questions? I don't have a good answer to that, but it seems to me, you know, we clearly passed the age of piracy, very clearly we are. We are clearly in the age of platform regulation because, you know, we are in a phase of radical experimentation. So globally, all these new models are springing up and a new model will emerge. But we need to find a way of assessing policy positions here. And we haven't found that yet. Thank you.
I would like to know if nowadays that we have more time of seeing this consuming in streaming platforms and this kind of technology, if this long tail theory that with these platforms and this access we would consume more alternative things except for the mainstream, and if the numbers show that this actually happened, even if it's a small scale, or if it's the opposite actually, if it's more mainstream now than ever.
So it's, I mean, the platforms will know it. So we know it only indirectly. So the study Joe cited, you can look at whether it had any effect on the distribution of income, and there it doesn't seem to have much has seemed to have happened. So it's certainly not that the kind of winner-take-all curve has flattened. Okay, so if there's more of a long tail, and you know we kind of all have more diverse consumption habits, then you should expect that curve to flatten. Hasn't happened at all. But the platforms themselves are actors in that. Yeah, we've got recommendation algorithms, and they tend to enforce existing patterns. I mean, that's how machine learning works. So my intuition is unless you counteract that actively, you know, by either having other kind of rules which counteract, you know, these pattern concentration, it will in fact go the other way. You know, it will not lead to the long tail having more exposure. But it's an empirical question, and yeah, you know, we should know the answer to that.
And just a counterpoint, a personal feeling on this, and also on the what the other colleague said, Rasmus, is that if we as an artist, we should not take a bit of the advantage of this business factor of this what these platforms are doing, and by ourselves take initiatives like, for instance, me as an artist, I don't think it's fair or it's nice to buy likes or buy listenings or do this kind of thing to empower my music or market it. At the same time, this is what most of the major companies always did, or all the when you're a big player, you try to buy your market. So me as an artist, I'm thinking more and more about the fact that perhaps I should be buying listenings and be buying and investing on this thing to actually be able to break the system from inside. Because if I don't do this, either the way the system operates, it's going to lead to the other way around. So this is something I myself, as a composer and artist, I think, okay, if I wait for these answers to come from them, it's never going to come. So perhaps I should break the system and find ways to break it from inside, either if they are a little bit unfair or undemocratic or I don't know, but fuck, I feel like in this position, you know, and I would like to know from you as a theorist how you feel and see this.
I think there's already an industry, you know, a secondary industry which manipulates algorithms. So I mean, it's very well known for search engines. It's very well known for Amazon, and it's a cat and mouse game. There's a whole industry which, you know, tries to control the market making aspect of platforms, and they do precisely what you're saying. You know, so they pay. So the small company which present on Amazon will pay a consultant to change the way they are ranked, in order to do that, they need to understand how the algorithm of Amazon has recently changed, and basically. So in the music industry, I think same things are happening. There are consultants around, you know, who get you, you know, higher up on Spotify, and I fail to see this as a productive use of capital. So I think the better way is to break up these markets, you know, in a way, you know, either you have a marketplace and the marketplace is regulated as a marketplace, and then, you know, Amazon shouldn't be able to sell themselves competing against, or they shouldn't change the roles so they maximize the money, you know, the companies pay for them for. So, and these arguments have been made, you know, many times, and Google has lost, you know, European Commission in the European competition cases on similar issues. You know, this kind of cross linking different type of services. So I think my intuition is would be, but you know, some other views been, you know, you have to break up these the platforms into component parts which can be meaningfully regulated. But since we don't know, you know, what the outcome of that will be, it's easy to say that in theory, you know, but whether the world would be a better place if that happens it's harder to predict.
Thank you. This was indeed an interesting match, you know, between the four presentations. So my question is, if this is true that we are shifting into, you know, from selling products into providing services, like we've heard about Spotify, and also in your talk, what is still the role for copyright in this context? And I think, you know, one question would be, I mean, you focus on platform regulation, whereas in fact what we also see is, for instance, in the film industry, a lot of the content providers, the producers, are actually becoming you know, are turning into streaming themselves, right? And sometimes facilitating platforms or competing with their own business model. If you look at the, you know, Disney new business model. And so the question is whether, you know, those players should also be regulated as platforms. I mean, isn't it a little bit short-sighted for us to focus on platform when the market is changing, and maybe our focus should be for regulation should be the data and the prediction models and, you know, the actual activity rather than looking at particular players that may disappear at one point?
I think they're extremely important questions, and because the public debate has moved at creating this target, you know, of pretty much in a sense, you know, these are multinational companies beyond our control, so let's go for them. It's dangerous, you know, if that's your motivation for doing it. And you might be right, you know, that if we take the data premise seriously, and if we take competition laws seriously, and otherwise say, you know, have due process, and you know, don't create all these new regulators, you know, that this might be the right approach. I really don't know. I think it's very unlikely this will happen, because the global trend is creating these new regulators. You know, NetzDG is not the last one. You know, the online harm agenda is everywhere. You know, for many reasons, political reasons mostly, you know, but and then if the online harm agenda is kind of lifted over to creative content, you may end up in a mess. And the paradox situation is really that copyright law has been the first one to do it, isn't it? So we are saying, you know, the online harm agenda potentially will mess up, you know, how we think about production of creative content. But yeah, in fact, we've done the opposite. You know, we've used copyright law as the first example of changing liability. So making platforms liable for stuff they don't do, but, you know, users do. It's a paradoxical situation. So I think my intuition is definitely on your lines. You know, regulatory caution is what's required. Due process, regulatory caution. And you know, knowing more what happens in the black box.
There's a weird statistic, and I don't know if it's true because I feel like the industry is often skewing their statistics for their own agendas. But it's out there. It's viral. People talking about how the vinyl industry has now overtaken the selling of digital music. And I find that a nice positive statistic because I feel like there's a lot of things that are happening in the analog world that are worth preserving and continuing. And I'm very concerned about how the digital marketplace shapes and has the power now to shape so much of our culture. So since we're in a legal framework here, I'm just wondering if there are things we can ask and pursue about preserving the things that we do in the analog realm. And then I wanted to share an anecdote about something that happens in terms of bands working in working musicians working as a band. There's not much sustainability for a band project these days. People wind up giving up pretty quickly, and no one also really. What was I going to say? The ability for like four or five people to work on a piece of music together and spend a year on a concept album is just not something that's rarely going to happen today because the market is working so fast. Something has to come out new, and so it's something. It's just an anecdote to show that like the digital culture, the way it's shaping things, is there's a lot of negative things to be pointed out of like why we need to protect ourselves from how this market disruption is occurring, and like what can we do to preserve the kinds of analog production stuff, if that's even the right term for it, somehow to protect the way we produce culture before the digital disruption came about.
I think that's a question to all of us, really. It's not one for me, but I think you know, the answers could very much my you know co-speakers could take some of these questions.
Thank you.